Let's talk first about the decline of the system that maybe peaked sometime in the past century. You mentioned corporate capitalism, which I think maybe some people might not realize is what our current form is, and state socialism as the two alternatives that people think that's it's either or, and so we have to choose corporate capitalism. Say what you mean by that, and maybe you can tell us why the system declined or what you saw as a decline.
Those are good and big questions. I mean, first, a simple point that traditional thought about capitalism and the very conservative Chicago School of Economics has this as its premise was really about competitive small and medium-sized business capitalism, where there actually was a free market. And that's a very, very different kind of capitalism than what you see with gigantic companies, big firms, big banks, and with their lobbyists. The best investment for a big bank is paying for a dozen high-priced lobbyists in Washington. And I say a dozen, I should say there's several thousand around here. That concentration of power in big corporations, that was not the vision of the free market capitalism that many people hold in their minds. It's a very different animal. In fact, the founders of the Chicago School of Economics, the source of much modern conservative economic thought, regarded that as an outrageous violation of the principles of democracy and liberty and free competition. And so did some of the great conservative economists like von Hayek, who's also a free market economist. What we have is a concentration of power, and you saw it in the banking structure. You know, Wall Street moved right into the Treasury Department, literally. Goldman Sachs executives were everywhere you looked within the Treasury Department, and the lobbyists were on the outside lobbying. And the idea system that supporting these big banks, that's not what people had in mind when we were talking about a different America. And on the other hand, you know, the socialist vision was always, in some ways, a religious vision about equality and community. And some historians have argued that if you actually probe beneath Karl Marx, what you find is essentially a Christian vision of a society, as in the Bible in Acts 2, where people give up their property to achieve a community, egalitarian community. Well, that vision obviously was not what the Soviet Union became, and not what state socialism, where the ownership of the wealth was, instead of in the corporations, it was in the state, which gave overwhelming power to the government, and with it, the loss of freedom and democracy. So the way in which historians and economists think about political economic systems, and this is only a slight simplification, is that the location of property ownership really defines a lot about political power, where the wealth is. James Madison, for instance, defined it, and he very explicitly understood that property owners were going to dominate the political system. Well, in feudalism, that was the lords owning the land, and they dominated the political system. And in competitive capitalism, it was largely small businessmen, and most of them were businessmen farmers for a long time in the 19th century, and that's really the basis of American politics up till the early part of the 20th century. And in state socialism, it was the state. So the real question in corporate capitalism, it becomes these large corporations. So one of the real questions is, where is there a way of thinking about systemic change that is democratic, not only in elections, but in who owns the wealth? 1% of Americans today, and this is a really astounding figure, not only the corporations own the wealth, but 1% of the population owns just about half of the investment capital of the United States. That's almost medieval. Well, one premise is a different system would have to be much more democratic in its ownership of wealth. Free market capitalism was that way, more or less, that is, particularly when it was free market capitalism and farms, lots of farmers, the majority of the society. But now in the modern age, what we've been looking at is, to give you some examples of democratizing ownership of wealth and capital, 130 million Americans today are members of either co-ops or co-op credit unions. So that's a one person, one vote ownership of a business or of wealth. Another 13 million Americans are members of worker-owned cooperatives or worker-owned businesses of one kind or another. So that's another way of having democratic ownership of wealth. There are 4,000 or 5,000 neighborhood nonprofit corporations that benefit the neighborhood. And again, it's democratizing the use of wealth for the neighborhood. And of course, municipal ownership. Public utilities is a very common form of democratic ownership. There are something like 2,000 of those, many of them in the South, which is supposed to be conservative, but in fact, there are lots of utilities there. 25% of American electricity is from public utilities and co-ops. Again, democratic forms of ownership. They're not big corporations. They're not the giant state. Very decentralized. And America Beyond Capitalism, and in the book, I kind of survey the kind of thing that the press doesn't have time or money to really explore. Just beneath the surface, you see a lot of this developed on the ground, very American in content, but its basic principle is democratic ownership of wealth and hopefully democratic politics flowing from that if it develops and expands and become kind of the ground level basis of maybe the vision of a larger system. Now, we could talk about larger levels at the state and national level, but the starting point is, you know, the language of the Catholic Church and Catholic theology is very good on this. The principle of subsidiarity, as radical a decentralization as possible, and only moving to higher levels of ownership and control in public forms when necessary. So that's the idea which is developed at length in America Beyond Capitalism, really looking around again and again and again for examples on the ground in the United States that we can point to that are real and that give people a sense of what is being done or what can be done, what somebody else is doing in another community that you could do in your community that begins to embody and develop and expand on these basic principles.